What we need to know is that the vaccine is safe, of high quality and effective. This requires a whole lot of clinical trials, studies in animals, manufacturing studies to make sure that what the public would ultimately get is reproducible and can be trusted. So what we hear at the moment is the results coming out of the clinical trials, and these are very positive. But until we look at the raw data and make sure that it is what it says on the box, we can't recommend it for the European public. Mm.
The three trials that have been reported so far, the Oxford AstraZeneca, the Pfizer BioNTech, the Moderna trials, they're claiming in some cases up to 90% effectiveness. If I can just focus on how effective these vaccines might be, is that at this stage supported by the evidence that you're seeing?
So first of all, let me say that a 90% effective is very, very good for a vaccine. So the possibility that this will be supported in practice by what we see in the dossier makes us look very optimistically at this. When we as regulators look at the package, it's a huge amount of data that we need to analyze and make sure it's being done correctly. So it's difficult for us to say at this point whether what we're seeing, we can also support the 90% claims. But that's our job and that's what we're looking into. We want to be able to assure the public that what has been done does meet these standards.
In the case of two of the vaccines, there's new medical technology, a new approach involved. Does that complicate the assessment, delay the process?
So the new technology is messenger RNA technology. We haven't had vaccines used in practice that use this type of technology. So it means that we have to make sure that we have expertise, the right scientific expertise in looking at this. Obviously, we need to examine what the implications are, and it does make it more complicated, yes, because it's not a platform that we have much familiarity as we would with other vaccine platforms.
And in terms of the other key requirement, safety, how do you ensure that vaccines that might be approved for use are safe to use, particularly in these cases where they've been developed so rapidly over the period of less than a year?
Well, I just want to stress that even if the vaccines have been developed rapidly, the requirements for the safety monitoring are tough in terms of what we expect from companies. So we've been looking at least a six-week follow-up of the clinical trials, of the patients that are in the clinical trials. But we will also, once the product does get deployed on the market, we will be putting in additional monitoring systems to ensure that on rollout we can be confident that the safety of the vaccine is maintained. So, for example, we put in place a safety monitoring plan where we were expecting updates every month as opposed to every 6 months, what we normally would do. And we're also looking at independent studies on the safety to be rolled out at the same time.
You're saying, are you, that the safety checks are identical in the case of these vaccines as in the case of any other process, similar process that you're involved in fact, may even have been stepped up?
The safety requirements for these vaccines are the same safety requirements as we would expect for any vaccine.
And to what extent then does EMA review and assess what the companies are providing you with, as opposed to conducting your own, if you like, independent standalone trials or assessments?
In terms of the authorization of the vaccine, we review what the company does and we question it and we ask additional questions and we make sure that what they're saying is actually what was done and that we have confidence in it. So we do an independent evaluation of that. Now, once the product gets on the market, normally we require the companies to do studies to looking at issues that maybe we don't have as much data for. We would say maybe look at the pediatric population, maybe look at patients with existing illnesses. You know, have you studied that enough? Mm-hmm. But in this case, we're also going to ask, we're going to commission independent studies on the safety of the vaccine in real life.
It's obviously a very considerable job of work. If you had to beef up your own staffing, your own resources, extra funding to take on this again in such a short space of time?
So we've actually had to divert our internal resources from our core business, which is the evaluation of all medical products that come within our scope. We've had to divert resources to focus on the COVID response. We have got additional support from the Commission. We've got additional funding to do these post-authorisation safety and effectiveness studies. And we've just been promised additional resource from the 1st of January, again, to beef up our response to the COVID pandemic.
And what at this stage can you say about the timeline for all of this? I noticed in America, the FDA, which is your counterpart there, is talking about granting approval for vaccines by mid-December. When would you expect to be able to come to a final decision in relation to these?
This is something we're working very hard on at the moment. We haven't actually received the full applications from the company, so we can't do anything until we get that. What we did ask for is this rolling review, so we've allowed companies to put in part of the dossiers to us in advance of a full application. And all going well, we would be very hopeful that we could have a positive opinion before Christmas.
And at that point, as I understand it, what you will grant is what's described as conditional marketing approval. Now, that's not the perhaps the more usual approval that's given. What's the difference? What does that mean?
So the conditional marketing authorization allows us to require the company to do additional work following the authorization to follow up on parts of the data that can be done, let's say, in peacetime as opposed to in crisis time. There is a fundamental requirement for us to assure that there is a positive benefit risk ratio for the product, irrespective of whether it's conditional or otherwise. The difference is that the conditional allows us to review on a periodic basis. It allows us to place specific requirements on the companies to do follow-up that may not be immediately necessary for us to grant the authorization at the time.
So it's like a closer supervision, is in effect.
It facilitates us having closer supervision on the product.
And when you talk about being hopeful of giving this approval before the end of the year, does that mean that perhaps before the end of the year, some of these vaccines could be actually cleared for use and the vaccination programs be underway?
Well, that then becomes outside our control. And there are other factors that need to be taken into account. For example, the Irish National Immunisation Committee will need to look at how they want to use it in an Irish context. But it's basically the step that means that you can be sure that this product is safe, effective and of high quality and then is ready to be deployed once the countries decide what way they want to use it.
Can we talk for a moment about public confidence in this? I mean, you'll be aware there are very vocal anti-vaccine campaigns. Opinion polls suggest there is at least some level of public concern. How do you persuade people that approved vaccines are safe, that they're taking no additional or unnecessary risk by taking part in these programs when and if they arrive?
I think the onus is on us to be as transparent as possible to really assure the public that they can have trust in vaccines. We recognise that there's a need for a two-way dialogue. We're organising a specific meeting December the 11th, which is open to the public, where there is an opportunity for any individual to voice concerns, ask questions. This will help us also understand how we need to target our communication. I think there's so much misinformation out there at the moment that it behoves us to be the source of reliable and trustworthy information. And we need to do that in a way that meets the needs of the public, meets the needs of the patients.
Because it's the case, is it not, that a significant proportion of the population needs to be inoculated for any vaccination program to be effective?
This is the general idea behind vaccination, but the COVID, and I have to say that we're learning more about the COVID peculiarities as each week goes by. So there may be a multifaceted approach to how you would treat, detect, and vaccinate in a specific population that could be quite different to what we've seen before.
Just one specific question about some of these vaccines. Is it clear at this stage the extent to which they prevent someone from passing on the virus? This question of asymptomatic transmission, that they act against that. Do we know? Do we have an answer to that at this stage?
No, this is an area where we do need more data. To be fair, there is a lot of areas where we need more data, and that's one of the jobs we have, is to identify when we have enough data to be confident that the benefits outweigh the risks, but we need to make sure that there's additional data being collected to answer some of these questions as we move forward.
Do you need answers to those questions before you move to approval, or is that something that can come later, do you think?
That can come later.
Just finally, if I might, Eimear Cooke, on a personal note, you're the first woman to head up the EMA, the first Irish person to occupy the position of executive director. What's been your own story? You spent quite a number of years with the agency, but you've also worked for the World Health Organization.
Yes, so I qualified as an Irish pharmacist in 1992. I worked in various roles in the pharmaceutical sector until about 1992, when I moved to work in the European pharmaceutical regulatory system. I moved to Brussels and then subsequently to London to the European Medicines Agency. And then 4 years ago, a job came up at the World Health Organization on regulation of medical products, and I moved there, never really thinking that I might be back here 4 years later. But it's been a wonderful journey as an Irish person. I'm very proud. I'm proud to be a woman. I'm proud to be Irish. I'm proud to be an Irish educated pharmacist. And I think it's a wonderful opportunity to showcase what a great country Ireland is.
And of course, you've taken over an extraordinary moment, huge focus on the work that you and your team are doing. I suppose maybe you're feeling under pressure, but also feeling that this is a moment where you can make a real difference to the lives of millions of people around the world.
Yeah, one of the things I've been saying since I started 10 days ago is this is an opportunity to help people understand what regulators do, to show the impact of our work. It's really a unique opportunity in the history of regulation and the history of European regulation, pharmaceutical regulation in particular.